Welcome to Nice News. This is a broadcast about some very unusual topics. I'm Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. On Nice News, we cover information from all over the world, and the topics are varied. The program provides a time out from the daily news that doesn't always cover the happiest of topics. So give us a listen. Who knows what might give you a laugh or cause you to remember something from another era or even pique your interest, like this particular article. Quieter, less stressful dental drills are in the works. Thanks to local anesthesia, it's typically not painful to get a cavity filled, but that doesn't mean that the process is stress-free. The loud, shrill, whining sound of the dental drill in your mouth can be anxiety-inducing, even if you can't feel the device. What's more, the fear this noisy tool evokes hinders some people from getting the procedures that they need to maintain good dental hygiene. But one dentist is out to change that. Tomomi Yamada, an assistant professor at the University's of Osaka's Graduate School of Dentistry, is on a mission to reduce patient anxiety by developing quieter dental drills. On December 2nd, at the 6th joint meeting of the Acoustical Society of America and the Acoustical Society of Japan in Honolulu, Yamada presented research that could pave the way for more peaceful dental experiences. She has witnessed patients exhibit fear of getting into the dentist's chair, also known as odontophobia or dentophobia, firsthand. So Yamada and her co-authors decided to study the aeroacoustics of dental drills to try to pinpoint where that anxiety-triggering sound was originating and design new, less noisy instruments. Originally, I was doing research on dental materials, but I realized that almost no one, not even dentists, was tackling the sound problem scientifically, Yamada said. Using Japan's flagship supercomputer, the team conducted large-scale aeroacoustic simulation. They analyzed the internal and external airflow of the dental drill, which is powered by compressed air and rotates at around 320,000 revolutions per minute. It can generate high-pitched sounds reaching nearly 20 kilohertz. From there, they were able to visualize how air moves through and around the drill to create noise. Their findings? Our research showed that just making the drill quieter isn't enough to make the sound less unpleasant. What really matters is improving its sound quality. After doing additional testing on the psychological effects of the dental drill on children and adults, the research team also determined that the younger listeners perceived the sounds as louder and more unpleasant. This indicates that children's fear of dental sounds is not merely psychological, but also physiological in nature. Children truly hear these sounds differently, so their fear of dental treatment is a genuine sensory response, not just their imagination. Based on these takeaways, Yamada and her colleagues are working on minimizing the drill's noise while maintaining its performance by optimizing its blade geometry and exhaust port. Eventually, Yamada hopes to get the dental industry to adopt the new technology, noting that achieving a balance between the device's performance and safety is definitely crucial. She added, "Moving forward, we hope to work with dental manufacturers through industry-academia partnerships, progressing toward commercialization after completing the necessary regulatory and durability testing." This article, Quieter, Less Stressful Dental Drills, are in the works. Marika Price Spitulski writes, "Meet the trailblazer taking on a record-breaking solo Antarctic crossing. Finish line, I did it," Colin O'Brady wrote in 2018 after completing the first solo, unsupported and unaided crossing of Antarctica, covering 932 miles in 54 days. Now, 7 years later, the 40-year-old adventurer is pushing that finish line even farther, embarking imminently on an unprecedented 1,780-mile journey across the continent over 110 days, adding on the Ross-Filchner ice shelves in addition to the landmass between them. "I'm really curious if I can go back and push myself not just farther in the distance, but in a spiritual context, mind, body, soul," And to me, there's no better proving ground for that than Antarctica. Should he succeed, O'Brady will have another notch on his trailblazing belt, becoming the first individual to traverse the entire continent on foot, traveling solo and without any external support from one ice shelf to the other. The journey ahead will be anything but easy. He will face temperatures as low as minus 60 degrees Fahrenheit, hauling a 500-pound sled loaded with all of his supplies while wearing just a single set of clothes. But O'Brady is no stranger to challenging expeditions. A couple of years ago, he fell into a crevasse, a deep crack in a glacier, unroped. I was very fortunate to survive that crevasse fall, and I'm going to have to go over similar terrain. So there's no doubt about it that there are real consequences, real threats. He's now traveled to the continent 6 times, and during his last trip, the best-selling author spent nearly all of his time in complete silence, opting to largely forego music or podcasts and looking out at nothing but endless white landscape. And considering it's summer in Antarctica, O'Brady will experience 24 hours of daylight when he finally commences his crossing. But that doesn't mean it'll be clear skies. Oftentimes, probably maybe 30 to 40% of the time, the clouds come in and you can't see anything. I'm just navigating off of a compass. No way to see where you are going, even a few steps in front of you. If you think that sounds like the stuff of an adventure, a documentary, you'd be right. Netflix is following O'Brady for an upcoming doc, offering viewers a front-row look at what's sure to be quite a ride. As O'Brady puts it, it's a reminder to push one's limits despite fear. I'm definitely afraid of dying. I'm not trying to take some crazy risk or something like that. But when I really put my head on the pillow at night, what I'm more afraid of is not fully living. Want to follow O'Brady's journal? Where he is and where are his whereabouts? He'll be sending updates through a portable satellite, a unit that his team will post on social media. This article, written by Marika Price-Spitulski, Meet the Trailblazer, taking on a record-breaking solo Antarctic crossing. Julia Diddy writes, 13-year-old is cancer-free after receiving world-first treatment for incurable leukemia. After receiving a world-first gene-editing treatment, a young teenager from Leicester, England, has been in remission for over 6 months from a form of T-cell leukemia that was once considered to be incurable. According to Great Ormond Street Hospital for Children, known as GOSH, where she received the treatment, 13-year-old Alyssa was first diagnosed with T-cell leukemia in May 2021. After undergoing all current conventional forms of treatment to no avail, Alyssa and her family made the decision for her to participate in a clinical trial administered by GOSH. A year after her leukemia diagnosis in May 2022, she was admitted to the bone marrow transplant, BMT, unit and became the first reported patient in the world to receive base-edited CAR T cells that originally came from a healthy donor. Less than a month after the procedure, the young teen was in remission. A second bone marrow transplant was then performed to restore her immune system, and as of December, she was at home recovering while continuing to be monitored closely. The doctors have said the first 6 months are the most important, and we don't want to get too cavalier. But we kept thinking, if they can just get rid of it, just once, she'll be okay. And maybe we'll be right, said Alyssa's mother, Kiona. Alyssa is very mature, and you can forget she is just a child, but hopefully this can prove the research works and they can offer it to more children. After all of this needs to have been for something. The technique of base editing is the simplest terms, involves chemically converting single letters of the DNA code to change the T cells, making multiple changes to healthy donor T cells, which includes a way for the modified cells to recognize and attack the cancerous T cells. Regarding the extraordinary result of Alyssa's treatment, Dr. Robert Chiesa, who consults on bone marrow transplant at CAR T cell therapy at GOSH, said, only after she received her CD7 CAR T cell therapy and a second bone marrow transplant in GOSH, she has become leukemia-free. This is quite remarkable, although it is still a preliminary result, which needs to be monitored and confirmed over the next few months. The entire team here at GOSH are extremely happy for Alyssa and her family, and it's been a privilege to work with them over the past few months. We have been very impressed by how brave she is, and nothing makes me happier than seeing her outside the hospital, going back to a more normal type of life. As reported by Business Insider, the technique of base editing began in the lab of David Liu, a Harvard genomics researcher. In 2013, Liu corresponded with chemist Alexis Comor, and the pair began brainstorming the idea of base editing. After spending the next few years deep in research, in April 2016, Comor and Liu published their findings in the scientific journal Nature. To date, their work has since been cited over 34,000 times and, per the outlet, has been in key launching numerous biotech companies. Said Comor, "It's really crazy that this Frankenstein genome editing tool, put together from all these different parts, works so well." Following the success of Alyssa's treatment, GOSH is aiming to recruit up to 10 patients with T-cell leukemia who've exhausted all other treatment options, per the media release. And then they want to enroll them in other treatment options. Should it prove successful, the hope is that the treatment can then be offered to children at earlier stages in their cancer diagnosis, and the technique may prove viable for other types of leukemia. Alyssa said of her decision to undergo the inaugural procedure, "Once I do it, people will know what they need to do, one way or another. So doing this will help people. Of course I'm going to do it." Inspired by Alyssa's example, other researchers are now testing base editing therapies to treat other conditions. The FDA recently cleared a T-cell therapy similar to the one used at GOSH for human testing. In January 2022, Pfizer entered into an agreement with Beam Therapeutics, a biotech firm co-founded by Liu, to pay $300 million to collaborate on a number of base editing therapies, Insider reported. Seeing more patients like Alyssa experience remission from this treatment would mean so much to both the researchers who developed base editing, Liu told the publication, and to the communities of patients who might benefit. This article written by Julia Diddy, 13-year-old, is cancer-free after receiving world-first treatment for her incurable leukemia. Teens innovate CRISPR method for Lyme disease detection and treatment. A team of innovative students from Lambert High School in Georgia recently made waves at the International Genetically Engineered Machine Competition in Paris, showcasing their remarkable contributions to science and health. Their project focused on improving and testing treatment for Lyme disease, and it not only earned them a spot in the top 10, but highlighted the power of youthful creativity and determination. Despite the intense competition, which included over 400 teams from around the globe, Lambert High's team emerged as the highest-ranking American school out of 14, finishing strong among 390 international competitions. Their journey to this prestigious event reflects their commitment to the tackling of a pressure issue that affects countless individuals. Lyme disease, a condition often difficult to diagnose, can lead to years of suffering for those affected. Team captain Avani Karthik expressed the urgency of their mission, noting the frustrating reality that many people go through years without being diagnosed. This inspired the team to harness the groundbreaking CRISPR technology to develop a reliable test. CRISPR, a revolutionary tool in genetic engineering, allows scientists to precisely edit genes, paving the way for new treatment and diagnostic methods. The students focused on identifying a specific problem produced by the bacteria responsible for Lyme disease. Through their innovative approach, they designed a test that could detect the disease as early as 2 days after the infection, a significant improvement over existing methods that often take 2 weeks. The early detection could change lives and provide timely treatment for many. While they did not take home the grand prize, the Lambert High team showcased their skills and ingenuity, earning accolades for their impressive software tool as well. Their hard work and dedication were evident, with many team members putting in long hours to perfect their project and create a compelling presentation. biology teacher, Kate Scherer, who supported the students throughout their journey, acknowledged the risks involved in such an ambitious project, yet celebrated their achievement. "I can't imagine any of this working, but I'm happy to help you as much as I can," she said, embodying the spirit of encouragement that fueled the team's efforts. In the end, the students returned home with a sense of accomplishment and a valuable diagnostic tool that could help alleviate the suffering caused by Lyme disease, which affects 500,000 Americans each year. Their success serves as a reminder of the impact that young minds can have on the world and the importance of pursuing innovative solutions to real-life challenges. The inspiring story of resilience and ingenuity is a testament to the bright future that lies ahead with passion and science coming together. This article, Teens Innovate CRISPR Method for Lyme Disease Detection. Our next article is written by Emily Renee Johnston. Writing builds resilience by changing your brain, helping you face everyday challenges. Ordinary and universal, the act of writing changes the brain. From dashing off a heated text message to composing an op-ed, writing allows you to, at once, name your pain and create distance from it. Writing can shift your mental state from overwhelm and despair to grounded clarity, a shift that reflects resilience. Psychology, the media, and the wellness industry shape public perceptions of resilience. Social scientists study it, journalists celebrate it, and wellness brands sell it. They all tell the similar story. Resilience is an individual quality that people can strengthen with effort. The American Psychological Association defines resilience as an ongoing process of personal growth through life challenges. News headlines routinely praise individuals who refuse to give up or find silver linings in times of hardship. The wellness industry promotes relentless self-improvement as a path to resilience. In my work as a professor of writing studies, I research how people use writing to navigate trauma and practice resilience. I have witnessed thousands of students turn to the written word to work through emotions and find a sense of belonging. Their writing habits suggest that writing fosters resilience. Insights from psychology and neuroscience can help explain why. Writing rewires the brain. In the 1980s, psychologist James Pennebaker developed a therapeutic technique called expressive writing to help patients process trauma and psychological challenges. With this technique, continuously journaling about something painful helps create mental distance from the experience and eases its cognitive load. In other words, externalizing emotional distress through writing fosters safety. Expressive writing turns pain into metaphorical books on a shelf, ready to be reopened with the intention. It signals the brain you don't need to carry this anymore. Translating emotions and thoughts into words on paper is a complex mental task. It involves retrieving memories and planning what to do with them, engaging brain areas associated with memory, and decision-making. It also involves putting those memories into language, activating the brain's visual and motor systems. Writing things down supports memory consolidation, the brain's conversion of short-term memories into long-term ones. The process of integration makes it possible for people to reframe painful experiences and manage their emotions. In essence, writing can help free the mind to be in the here and now. Taking action through writing. The state of presence that writing can elicit is not just an abstract feeling, it reflects complex activity in the nervous system. Brain imaging studies show that putting feelings into words helps regulate emotion. Labeling emotions, whether through expletives and emojis or carefully chosen words, has multiple benefits. It calms the amygdala, a cluster of neurons that detects the threat and triggers the fear response of fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. It also engages the prefrontal cortex, a part of the brain that supports goal setting and problem solving. In other words, the simple act of naming your emotions can help you shift from reaction to response. Instead of identifying your feelings and mistaking them for facts, writing can help you simply become aware of what's arising and prepare for deliberate action. Even mundane writing tasks like making a to-do list stimulates parts of the brain involved in reasoning and decision-making, helping you regain focus. Making meaning through writing. Choosing to write is also choosing to make meaning. Studies suggest that having a sense of agency is both a prerequisite for and an outcome of writing. Researchers have long documented how writing is a cognitive activity, one that people use to communicate, yes, but also to understand the human experience. As many in the field of writing studies recognize, writing is a form of thinking, a practice that people never stop learning. With that, writing has the potential to continually reshape the mind. Writing not only expresses but actively creates identity. Writing also regulates your psychological state, and the words you write are themselves proof of regulation, the evidence of resilience. Popular coverage of human resilience often presents it as extraordinary endurance. News coverage of natural disasters implies that more severe the trauma, the greater the personal growth. Pop psychology often equates resilience with unwavering optimism. Such representation can obscure ordinary forms of adaptation, strategies people use to cope with everyday life. From rage texting to drafting a resignation letter, signify transformation. Building resilience through writing. These research-backed tips can help to develop a writing practice conducive to resilience. Write by hand whenever possible. In contrast to typing or tapping on a device, handwriting requires greater cognitive coordination. It slows your thinking, allowing you to process information, form connections, and make meaning. Write daily. Start small and make it regular. Even jotting brief notes about your day, what happened, what you're feeling, what you're planning or intending, can help you get thoughts out of your head and ease rumination. Write before reacting. When strong feelings surge, write them down first. Keep a notebook within reach and make it a habit to write it before you say it. Doing so can support reflective thinking, helping you act with purpose and clarity. Write a letter you never send. Don't just write down your feelings. Address them to the person or situation that's troubling you. Even writing a letter to yourself can provide a safe place for release without the pressure of someone else's reaction. Treat writing as a process. Anytime you draft something and ask for feedback on it, you practice stepping back to consider alternative perspectives. Applying that feedback through revision can strengthen self-awareness and build confidence. Resilience may be as ordinary as the journal entries people scribble, the emails they exchange, the tasks, lists that they create, even the essay students pound out for professors. This article, written by Emily Renee Johnston, Writing Builds Resilience by Changing Your Brain, Helping You Face Everyday Challenges. Andy Corbley writes, Woman stunned to see grandparents' wartime locket online after stranger buys it in a thrift shop to find the owner. From Canada comes the story of a lost family heirloom finding its way home in the most bizarre series of circumstances. Kelly Brown, a member of the Aurora Post of the Royal Canadian Legion, sat at her home last week in shock, staring at what appeared to be a black and white photograph of her grandparents smiling out from the inside of a locket, the subject of a post on Facebook. The Post's author, Allison Ann, said she had found and bought the locket at a thrift shop after recognizing the man in the photo was connected to the Royal Canadian Air Force. She wanted to know if anyone had a clue as to its original owner, a simple, selfless act that, against all odds, paid off. Little lost for words, Brown said, remembering the instant she realized it was her grandparents in the locket. Just, it's such a surreal, cool moment, the power of social media doing something good. Going back a few months, a branch of the Resource Thrift Shop in Barrie received a donation of things from a woman whose grandmother who passed away not long before. Inside were several jewelry boxes where the locket was eventually found before being put up for sale. That's where the locket resurfaced. But according to Brown, it disappeared long before that. perhaps as early as the year 2000 when, during a teenager organized house party, some of her grandfather's medals and personal items were allegedly stolen. Another possibility could have been a clear family effect of Brown's grandmother in 2010 following the death of her daughter, Brown's mother. In any case, the locket had a picture of Bill Mitchell, Brown's grandfather, who served as a warrant officer, second class in the RCAF during World War II, winning the Burma Star and the 1939-45 War Medal. This article, written by Andy Corbley, woman stunned to see grandparents' wartime locket online after stranger buys it in a thrift shop to find owner. And since we're coming to the conclusion of our program for today, I'd like to leave you with this quote of the day from Maria Popova. There are as many ways to love as there are to walk in a forest. Maria Popova. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's articles. Please join us again next time when we cover some unusual topics on Nice News. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Stay healthy, everyone. Be well. Be happy. Bye-bye.